with Conrad, he went to VC. And she goes, oh my God, I had the biggest crush on him. And I was like, oh yeah. And she goes, I told them, I said, I'm not going to spill her tea, but she's like, and then she gave me his number and I smudged it. It was the worst day of my life. And I should have been with him and not my husband. Isn't that funny?
It's so funny.
Let's go. Are you ready to level up your journey? Welcome to Get On Top, where we dive deep into the riveting tales of self-made entrepreneurs and corporate titans who have scaled the summit of success. We'll uncover the secrets behind their huge rise. Get ready for a roller coaster of insights, inspiration, and a roadmap to elevate both your mindset and your life. This is Get On Top with Morgan Brown. Today's guest understands excellence because he's earned it. Conrad Wazila started his career in elite sports, playing professional football in the CFL. That chapter taught him discipline, pressure, and what it really means to perform when there's nowhere to hide. Then he did what every high-level operator does. He evolved. Conrad saw early that gaming and esports weren't just a trend, they were an ecosystem. The global business opportunity hiding in plain sight. So he made the leap and built something without any hesitation. As a founder and CEO of ESE Sports, he's focused on the backbone of that industry, the infrastructure, the platform, and the systems that allow the space to scale properly and sustainably. Today, we're talking about shortcuts to success, taking companies public, building teams that actually execute, navigating M&As, and why thinking like an athlete gives founders a real competitive edge. This conversation is about vision, conviction, and building with intention. Please welcome to Get On Top, Conrad Wazila. So Conrad, welcome to Get On Top. Thank you for being here. I'm so excited to dive in. And I mean, of course, seeing you go from a VC football player, all the ladies were like, it's Conrad, to now getting to a place where you're making so much impact, like so much impact on the esports, on the whole gaming community, on the production level. Let's just dive right into it all. But thank you for being here. Tell me a little bit about, I think the first thing what comes to mind with you is this like true athlete identity that you've had like all your life. I mean, it's something that is so ingrained in you. Tell me, like, baby Conrad, where did that come from?
My family's always been super involved in sports, but it was my dream, like, as a little kid. I wanted to be a pro athlete. And I would tell my mom every day, I'm going to be a pro athlete. I'm going to be a pro athlete.
Oh, my God.
And she'd obviously laugh, but she was just number one supporter. She's like, go do it.
How young were you when you started saying that to your mom?
Like elementary school.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm not the biggest guy in the world either.
So. Yes.
And then I ended up picking football, which is
like the one you need to be big in. You need to be big in.
Yeah, but I just obviously had some natural talent, but I think it was just like the conviction from a young age that I wanted to do it.
You did a sport, but it was such a team sport piece. Like, what was so attractive to you at that point? Like, was it the strategy behind it? Was it just being amongst the community of athletes? What was the thing that was pulling you there?
It was actually interesting because I did a lot of individual sports growing up.
Okay.
Track and field, judo, and, you know, it's just you and you're alone. And then getting into that environment of Vancouver College, like the community and the team, it was just something like the scale was so attractive to me. And, you know, guys were getting full ride scholarships and playing professional. You know, they have such a great lineage at that school. It's incredible.
Really,
I think that was the big draw. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know, this is potentially a path to going to my ultimate goal of being a pro athlete.
It's like such a dream to be a pro athlete and then eventually getting there. Tell me about going into UBC and like going into those teams. What did that look like for you on a kind of a regular basis?
Well, I think that's like the misconception is UBC is not an easy school to get into, number one, but also the academic requirements are very stringent. Mm-hmm. And you're 24/7, two practices a day, you know, 4 to 6 hours of training a day.
Wow.
Plus full workload. with academics, it was a lot. Like, it was full on, and I was just so focused on the ultimate goal that I was just laser focused on being a pro.
My gosh. That
UBC kind of went by like a little bit of a flash for me.
Mm.
Looking back, I probably would have
taken it in
a little bit more, because mm-hmm. I was just so focused. I lived off campus. I just did everything just to focus on football.
I think people have a misconception about like you becoming wanting to be that pro athlete so young, getting to that place. And then like, what did it take from you mentally? I think that was the big part of it, that I think a lot of people are going to be listening to that want to be that pro athlete. Like, what are some tips and tricks that you did to get there?
Well, simply put, like, the dedication at that level was no parties, no drinking.
Yeah.
Going to bed at 8, 9, getting up at 5, 6.
Wow.
Like, full on. Like, I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I just played football.
The conditioning.
And, yeah. It was just nonstop. Like, I was just so focused on that end goal.
And then you got there, which is amazing. And walking into that space, obviously you kind of going from being in that university space to obviously playing for the CFL, did you feel like you accomplished it? Like, when you got there, were you like, I can breathe? Or was it like, I have to maintain myself to get here?
Once again, going back to that original point of, I don't think I gave myself enough time to really like absorb the moment and realize how special it was. I was just still so focused on day to day.
Yeah, winning and getting to that space and showing up.
Yeah, but it was such a cool experience. Like, I was young, I was 20 years old.
Wow.
And walking in, funny story is, I'm a huge Notre Dame fan, like the college.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to watch a guy named Jarius Jackson.
Okay.
I literally had his poster in my room. I walk in the door and he's there.
Oh my gosh.
He's my teammate, right?
I know, this is.
And I'm like,
hi.
Hey, Jarius. I had your poster on the wall. And he's laughing. He's like, we're teammates now. Let's go.
Whoa.
So it was super cool. Like, the guys were amazing. Guys like Giroy Simon and Jarius, like, unbelievable professionals, but they just made you feel so welcome. It was awesome.
It's such an interesting thing, like, for a lot of people, when they're trying to dreaming and they're going to that level, even for my own self, I always knew I was going to be an entrepreneur. I always knew I was going to own companies. I totally believe in that complete, like, focus, but also, like, that huge manifestation.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what you're saying to me is, like, I just walked into something I kind of already saw.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel that too? Or do you feel like you kind of had to visualize, like, to that level?
Yeah, like, you struck a chord with me for sure. That's me in a nutshell. I do mm-hmm. that with everything.
Yeah.
I place myself in those rooms around those people like way before, 5, 10 years before, even mm-hmm. with business.
Right.
But with sports specifically, I was already there. It was just a journey to get there.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm a huge believer in that.
In the manifestation world. I'm really happy you said that. Because I think you kind of get to that point where, as a business owner, you forget that journey. You really are. You're trying to get to that outcome. You're trying to get to that level. In sports as well, I always say to my team, I'm like, we are athletes in our own field. And how much does that correlate into you kind of the next steps of being in that CFL position, being in that athlete position? And then what happens next? Like, what took you out of the sport, I guess?
It was a little bit of a mix, but mm-hmm. some injuries, understanding that I always loved business. I wanted to pursue things outside of football.
Oh, great.
And getting to the pro level is amazing. It's, you know, childhood dream, all these kinds of things, but it is a business.
Mm-hmm.
And that I realized that very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting cut, traded, moving around on rosters. You know, you see grown men getting cut on a daily basis. You know, they're crying, leaving the locker
families.
Rooms, their families.
I know.
It's a lot. And specifically, football is the most overcoached, overanalyzed sport in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine going to work every day and someone has a camera on you.
Oh my gosh.
And they review it every day, right? So,
like,
it's
one
a
mess
lot.
Up. Yeah, a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah.
What's that piece of advice of, like, handling that pressure in that athlete position, I think? Like, obviously, you're so much scrutiny.
Yeah.
Like, I think every day you go through it. But as an athlete, do you just kind of zone out and just focus on your own space?
well, specifically my position,
yeah,
you lose almost every play.
Oh my God.
So it's a personality type too, specifically in my position.
Mm-hmm.
But I think all the really strong players have that kind of natural ability to just forget and next play.
Yeah.
You know, that's what all the coaches would always say, just next play, next play, next play.
Yeah. Yeah. You have such, you build up such a resilience to it, I think. Okay. So that happens. And then COVID, I guess it would be like later on. Yeah. What was the next step for you?
So away from football, you know, I'm exploring business. We were heavily involved in real estate with my sister, my brother, my family. And I said, you know, let's explore different opportunities in Europe and in the US. So I started traveling to explore some new opportunities. I already saw the market kind of getting a bit softer in general.
Yeah.
And I had a really strong mentor in Europe.
Okay.
One of the biggest developers in Poland. I'm Polish.
Yes.
So I said, you know, let's go there and get my feet wet with some bigger players.
Mm-hmm.
And he opened my eyes to some major, major projects, which was amazing. And while I'm there, just by fluke, there's the basically the biggest gaming event in the world in a city called Katowice.
Okay.
And I was like, okay.
What's this about?
What's this about, right?
Yeah.
He's like, well, I got free tickets. Let's go check it out. I show up. I'm doing my research. Intel just invested $100 million into this, you know, big spectacle. Sold out stadium. I was like, I feel like I'm in football again. This is outrageous. How is there...
Is this a night event or is it a day event?
It's like a whole festival.
It's a full weekend. Festival yeah. that you're dealing with.
Billboards, you know, Puma sponsorship, Nike sponsorships. I'm going, what's going on here? Like, I felt that was like back in the CFL, right?
Wow.
So I go into this event and my mind's kind of spinning and I'm going, I can't believe this is incredible.
It's
so
blowing your mind.
Blowing my mind.
Just blowing your mind. Conrad's just crazy.
And I'm like, okay, research time, right? On the train back home. That's when Twitch started to come on.
Yeah, really huge.
They got bought out for $1 billion+. Everyone thought that was a big deal.
With Amazon.
I'm sure they probably would have held on. Because
That was a bad...
100 times that now.
I know.
So I just kind of got this little bug saying, the parallels between traditional sports and that gaming world were very obvious to me.
Mm.
So I said, who's doing this at scale? Like, who's running these events? Who's producing this? This is like exactly like pro sports. And they're like, there's not really a lot of players in this.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just got really excited.
Yes, yeah, so that's why I was excited. And I looked at my buddies in real estate. He's like, you're nuts. I don't know anything about this at all. And I said, okay, get your three best guys.
Okay.
Bring them in the office. And I brought some sports guys and you know, different people. I said, come into the office. Let's start this. And they're like, start what? I said, well, let's become the biggest, you know, picks and shovels business for the gaming industry.
Yeah, right.
And they're like, I'm in. Let's do it. So we literally started with three guys.
Wow.
Now it's starting to get serious. We're starting to get some contracts. We're working with big publishers like Electronic Arts and Microsoft and all these big players. And it's starting to catch on. And then COVID happens.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm going, okay, most people are... There's huge fear generally about COVID, what's going to happen. You know, like I was telling you before, literally boarding up, you know, all the shops and stores and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, my inclination about the business is like, well, let's go raise money and build because that means everyone's going to be at home and gaming is going to go on a
It's going to be even better.
Right?
Yeah. You're seeing the opportunity.
Yeah. So I see the opportunity. So I'm calling all my banker friends in Toronto and New York, and I'm going, we got to do this now. Trust me, we have to do this now. And they're going, they're literally hanging up on the phone. They're going, you're nuts. Like, have you looked outside? Like, it's COVID. Like, the market's down. Everything's down, right? No access to capital. So I'm sitting there in my room going, I need to do this. And I could see the uptick. Everyone's gaming, Netflix, everything's all digital is just going on this huge run. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to put the money up. So I just went all in. I put in like
the whole business,
the whole thing. Like I put in all my money and everyone's going, man, this is like risky, right?
Oh my gosh.
So fast forward.
Did you have to pivot? I have a question there. Because everyone couldn't really get to these big production events that you're talking about.
We went digital online.
So you went full digital online, yeah. So heavy into the events online. You sold tickets basically. Is that kind of how it worked? Like, how does that work on the going online?
This is kind of like it really transformed into the business that I sold last year.
Yeah.
It's called Game Addict.
Yeah.
We became the largest customer acquisition platform for PC games in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we hyper-focused on.
Okay, you focused on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, during that
because we just
space.
Knew that this is the time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So we went, we literally were just kind of scraping by. And then I got the grandiose idea of let's list the company.
Yeah, very smart.
And then, so I'm calling the bankers back and they're going,
are you kidding me, Conrad? Like, what?
What are you talking about? Like, it's like the exchange could be closed or who knows? At this point, COVID's like at its peak. And they're like, well, where are you going to get the capital to list the company? I said, I put in the money myself.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. And then,
which is just like, I think for people that are listening, most people are, unless I think the only reason why you probably did that, I'm guessing, is because you had such a strong feeling on it. But a majority of people, most business owners, people that are, everyone knows that you're usually working with other people's money, right? At that
absolutely.
Level.
Yeah, absolutely.
How comfortable were you at that position to be like, I'm going to put up, raise it, I'm going to do it all myself? Were you, nothing that even came through your mind, you just went for it?
Yeah, it's just, that's kind of my personality in general. Like if I'm doing it, I'm doing it and I'm going to get it across the line.
Yeah.
And I think that conviction started to get recognized by some of these outside investors. They're going, holy smokes, he just put in his money. Maybe I'll put in a little bit.
Okay. Amazing.
So then we go and I say, we're going to list. We go through the whole process and, you know, my gut feeling was right. And it went on this absolutely parabolic
tangent.
Run. And the company's done hundreds of millions in revenue.
It's amazing.
You know, we were able to sell the company.
Yeah.
It was just the perfect storm. The timing was there. And looking back, it's a classic go with your gut kind of moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I did that because I would have given away a lot of the company, right?
Yeah, it's such a parallel too because you... like, it's kind of, I'm always referring back to like your first story about like you having to decide like when to pass the ball or when to make them.
Yeah.
And then you just go with your gut intuitively.
Yeah.
And to the point where you're doing the same thing with business. And so it's pretty amazing that you just kind of stuck with it, which is great. So since then, like, obviously tell us where the company now is. Like, what does it look like on an overall arching piece? Because now you have another acquisition that just happened.
Yeah, it's like a mushroom effect, right? Mm-hmm. So we sold a technology business that gave us a lot of credibility in the space. Now mm-hmm. we've transitioned into, you know, running Bombi, mm-hmm. the production company. It's probably a top three production companies in the world for gaming specifically. And that's scaling rapidly. And now I could dive back into a little bit of my passion of doing some traditional sports. So it's been a ton of fun. But being a part of that ecosystem allowed mm-hmm. me to invest in dozens of different companies.
Yeah, great.
Outside of gaming, you know, AI related mm-hmm. or quantum and big data and, you know, all these amazing opportunities, you know, mushroomed from that original
thought,
right?
Yeah, and the connection for it. I think I've watched like one or two esports gaming documentaries.
Yeah.
And what was like just so profound is just the amount of users, the amount of players, the audience that's coming into it. But also the fact that these gamers, and this is where that discount of these athletes are, they're like athletes. Like these guys are, they have
training facilities.
Yes.
The prize pools are in the tens of millions of dollars.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, big groups are pouring in incredible amounts of capital. Like the Saudi investment fund.
I saw that.
PIF, they just did a $40 billion investment into gaming by and large. We work with them a lot. They're one of our biggest clients.
Yeah.
It just shows you the scale and the viewership. It's surpassed all traditional sports.
Yeah. It's
Super Bowl, you know, NBA finals. It's bigger.
You know what the biggest transition is that I've noticed is I think for so long, the general, like the traditional athletes kind of looked at it like, this is nothing. And now they're starting to really consider it. Like, are you seeing that too? Or is it just...
I'll take it a step further.
Okay.
My generation, we played video games in our downtime just for something to do. The new kids that are getting drafted into the NFL or NBA, they're all gamers. They stream, you know, they're playing. Some of them are even like quasi pro gamers themselves.
Wow.
Like, it's huge.
It's huge. And I was at a friend's house and they are lawyers and they had a whole gaming thing built out in their house. And I was like, okay, this is nice. I'm like, I can get used to this. But it is one of those ones where I don't think it can be open to not just athletes, but to the whole general public, right? And I'm like, do you play? And it's interesting to see what they're playing too. This is one thing I wanted to ask you about. Like, obviously, there's tons of games, like
League of Legends.
League of Legends, yeah. Like a lot of those ones that I was researching. I don't play, but I just had to get in there. A lot of your business is also managing the audience for that, right? How do you guys dissect that, like with the team? I'm just so interested on that side of it.
Now, without COVID, there's a lot of live events. And we specialize on a lot of the big live events. It's literally A to Z. From literally building out the stage and the lighting and all the kind of the glitz and glam of the event. But on the back end, it's curating all of the live streaming, the data and gameplay.
Wow.
You know, all the interaction, right, with the actual live event and what's happening internally with the game.
At Oakland Realty, real estate is personal. It's your first home, your next chapter, your biggest decision, and your biggest opportunity. That's why we lead with people first. Trusted advisors, deep local knowledge, and a commitment to doing things right every time. Whether you're buying, selling, or simply planning your future, our agents are here to guide you with clarity, confidence, and care. Because a home isn't just a place you live, it's where life happens. Oakland Realty, inspiring positive change. One person, one home, and one community at a time.
I feel like you, watching some of the videos, like, I mean, I got to go to one. First of all, you're making me come. Yeah. I'm going. But I just love the hype behind it.
Oh, it's incredible.
It's like, it's international. Like, I think that's what thing people are like not taking in is that there's these teams that have like brothers and friends that are coming in and they're like, the pool is like $8 million to win.
It's wild.
And I'm like, why am I not there?
What am I doing?
Like, what am I doing? Yeah. But just watching people and having so much conviction, it must make you feel something as an athlete too, right? Because you're like,
no, it's cool.
This audience is like the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's a younger generation.
Younger generation. But to your point, you know, we just did a show in Japan. We've done stuff all over the world, you know, 30,000-40,000 people in the stadium. We did a big show in Toronto, the biggest one ever.
Oh, great.
With Overactive Media. They put on a phenomenal show.
How many people are in those stadiums?
For example, like the one we did in Japan with Electronic Arts, that was the biggest show ever in Japan. There was about 30,000.
Wow.
The one we just did a big show in Dallas. It was a festival. There's hundreds of thousands, 50,000 in the stadium. Like, they're really big shows.
It's a big, they're big shows. Big yeah. And the sponsorship, like, tell me about the sponsorship level of that. Like, obviously, people are just throwing money to be have their brand kind of to be seen and to be in that space and to be in that ecosystem, as you mentioned. Like, how are they choosing these big events? Like, and who are in those spaces? Like, what are the main sponsors that you're seeing?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. It's a huge variety because they want the eyeballs from the younger generation. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of shows for Red Bull, for example. But then there's sports brands, apparel brands.
Yeah.
You know, then there's the classic, you know, the Microsofts, the Electronic Arts, the big game publishers. They want to be front and center. But it's literally from Coca-Cola to Nike to banking sponsors.
Wow.
TD, BMO.
You know, anybody.
And anyone and everyone.
It's so crazy to say that, like, people should really, it feels like we should all go witness it. Like, go in there, right? Go into those spaces. Where do you see that future kind of going in the short future? I think the near future. We're seeing a lot of people come
through. Yeah, I mean, I said it from the beginning. Like, when I first started the journey, I said there's going to be a huge cross-section between traditional sports, music, and gaming.
Yeah.
And this is all coming to fruition now. And that's why that our next phase of the business is actually expanding into music and traditional mm-hmm. sports, because it's a big race for eyeballs.
It really is.
Right? And we have the platform, you know, we put on the event and we're seeing it now. You know, recently we did a production for the NHL All-Star Game. We've done stuff with F1, pro boxing. Like, it's in everything and everybody wants to be a part of it. And mm-hmm. they're losing a big audience piece, right?
They
traditional are. Sports, they're losing that audience.
Yeah.
And they're going, well, how do we connect the dots?
Mm.
And it's through streaming and gaming and just being more digital and more aware of where these younger eyeballs are.
Yeah, like you think of Twitch and everyone got on it even more when Justin Bieber came on. And I was like, oh my God, what's Twitch? Like yeah. that millennial yeah. generation.
Yeah.
Because they were coming through. I saw that this game market, I saw this big headline. It says the game market is huge. Esports is a slice of it. Gaming overall is projected to have $188.8 billion in 2025 with 3.6 billion players globally. This is the ocean of esports that the esports swim in. And I thought to myself, oh my God, are people not seeing how heavy this is? How are investors getting involved in this? Like, that's what I want to hear is, like, obviously a lot of people they're going on to purchasing stocks and what other avenues can people get into that business?
Well, it's always top down. So you see, you know, the Saudis dedicate mm-hmm. $40 billion into the space. These are very calculated moves that they're making with mm-hmm. huge capital. Microsoft, they did the largest tech acquisition in history. They bought a game developer, Activision Blizzard.
Yeah. Yes.
I think that was in like the $100 billion range. So you just follow
the trend.
Like all the big guys are doing it. NVIDIA, supercomputers, AI. It's all this big wave and trend heading in that direction. And you see like these new upstart Kick is a competitor of Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now there's two large streaming platforms and there's going to be more. I think everyone's just flooding into it. But from an investor standpoint, just doing your research, you know, getting involved via, you know, like you said, traditional like stocks. Market, et cetera, or, you know, approaching some funds or angel investors, et cetera, mm-hmm. to get kind of a piece of the pie.
Yeah. Which I'm seeing a little bit more of now. Yeah. Like a lot of that younger generation is like, this, of course, I'm playing it. I want to be a part of it. And I think there's so much more, there's a lot of more companies that will come of this and start to build out.
Oh, 100%.
I think it's one of those magic pieces that if you don't get on, just like AI, like it's like you're going to be left in the dust.
I always equate investing to mm-hmm. common sense.
Yeah.
It's literally happening in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the investors that I speak with, I say, do you have kids? And generally, they say yes.
Mm-hmm.
I said, do they play Roblox? Yes. My credit card's been
maxed out
on Roblox for years. But that's one of our biggest clients. Like that's, there has to be that common sense piece to investing.
Yeah.
If it's happening, believe it, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
ChatGPT comes out, AI, all the integration with AI. This is happening now. So you're late to the party. So get into it now.
Yeah. And there's so much more to be said about like just the player side of it. I'm an F1 fan. And so for me, I see simulators, I see things that are coming into that level. And I'm like, this is awesome. Like I like the business side of F1. So for me, I start to say, okay, well, they're starting to integrate a lot of those pieces. Will that start to happen in all the traditional sports? Will you start? And just, you're right, common sense and being that investor, being aware of it. Do you think we're going to see a lot more of that happen in traditional sports?
Oh, absolutely. F1 is the best example.
Yeah.
Because all the drivers use simulators to practice. It's cheaper, more efficient. They can make changes to their car digitally versus mm-hmm. going out on the track and spending millions. So simulators, that's a huge boom. The F1 market is just on fire.
It's so on fire.
But we've done NASCAR, F1, you know, World Rally Car Championships. Like we've already integrated a lot of the sim racing gaming stuff in that world. And I think it's going to translate into other sports too, because you could just practice, get visuals, you know, for gameplay digitally and accumulate the knowledge for the game beforehand.
Yeah, virtually. Right? Yeah,
so I think it's inevitable. They're already doing it. It's huge in the NFL. One of my former teammates actually started a really cool company where they have like the
visual VR goggles.
Goggles, and they're taking mental reps with the VR goggles to see different scenarios, things of that nature. So it's
It's exciting.
It's 100% already there.
Yeah. It's ready to go.
Yeah.
How are you, like, I'm looking at all these earnings from people, and I think what people need to understand are, like, the three buckets of money that is coming to these players. And I want to share this with people because I feel like they don't realize and they don't take these athletes as serious. I'm like, these guys are making salary. Then they're making prize money. Then they're making sponsorship.
Yeah.
And it really creates something. What is that true? Like, how is it like a regular athlete where they have a very slim time to be that athlete? Like, how long can they go for, I guess?
Yeah, no, there, it actually is a small window, typically a few years, but there's so much more to it now. Now they could become streamers, right? Influencers.
Wow.
And then they just do it casually and make even more money. So I think from a competitive perspective, they only have a couple of years and they kind of get burnt out, which is kind of typical.
Typical athlete.
Pro athlete is, you know, the 3 to 5 year kind of window. So it's very similar.
Yeah, the only difference is that the injury is like carpal tunnel.
Yeah.
Which is the key part of it.
They have, like I said, they could easily turn into an influencer or just a streamer just in general and make money that way.
Yeah, that's a crazy thing. I want to go back to just you transitioning from like such an athlete mind to that business mindset. How did that work being like all of a sudden the CEO of this large company? That must have, what were some of those, I guess, big landmark times for you that made you realize you were in that position of, you know, really taking care of a large company? Did you just walk into it and feel like you were in that identity, or did it, what helped you, I guess?
You kind of hit on it earlier of, you know, what drew me to like a team sport, but being a part of a team sport at a high level. And like I mentioned, pro sports is a business.
Mm-hmm.
You learn whether you know, subconsciously or not, you're in a business and you're learning how people interact. You know, there's 50 grown men in a locker room. I was around some of the best coaches ever, seeing how they interact with people and how they built a team, how they built an organization. So it was easy for me to kind of touch on those little points and then kind of build from there. I felt it was really natural, like building a team. I always hired athletes. People that were motivated. So they had that same kind of makeup. They understood what it took. They'd put in the extra time and effort.
Wow.
But it was just, it was like riding a bike. It was really easy for me.
And what about the avenue of the business side for yourself? Like obviously going from the field and strategy, but also to like spreadsheets, knowing knowing all that level of, you know, of that space where you get to that, like, what's my revenue piece? What's going to be what's the balance sheet of what's happening to, and then going to sell it online, going into GSX, like, what is this? So was that a learning curve for you?
The incredible learning curve.
Yeah.
You literally, it's like any business. You become a Swiss Army knife. Mm-hmm. You have to learn everything. So you're this kind of quasi lawyer, accountant. It all gets thrown at you, but the best thing to do is learn everything.
Mm-hmm.
Learn from ground zero. The fact that I did it from scratch, I learned everything from 0 to 100. And that was the best thing I did. I didn't lean too much on external people in the beginning.
Great.
And I tried to learn everything myself, and that paid massive dividends. Now I could do it with my eyes closed.
Yeah, of course.
And now I would shift towards, I know who to hire and putting in high valued people in specific spots and let them excel at what they do.
Yeah, it's finding the talent. I think a lot of people would say is that the hardest part is making sure that you're not only going with your gut, but you're really finding the people that are going to drive it home and get you into that position, right? How did you find that talent other than you hiring kind of what you feel like is a makeup of an avatar or person of yourself that works well with you? How did you find the talent in that space?
Yeah, I think just generally speaking, being very open to learning, you attract mentorship. They just naturally want to mentor, right? So then you get a great mentor. He introduces you to someone that he trusts, that he's worked with for 20, 30 years. You create that relationship. And then you could start not only hiring talent, but trusted talent and people that have executed at a high level and have done it before. And then you're constantly learning. So you're, you know, with a board member, you know, you're gaining 20, 30, 40 years of experience just being around that person. Multiply that by 5 people. And now you have this wealth of knowledge and you're just soaking it all in like a sponge.
That's the secret to it. Yeah.
I think that's the secret sauce.
Yeah, I think so.
That beginning part is like, you're in the deep end.
Yeah.
You don't know anything.
I always say, you have to have your MBA. Yeah. Like, you got to get to that place. So like, you might get your degree in business ownership quite quickly just by being on it. But you got to get to that. When you get to that level of you feeling like you got your MBA based off of just being in it, it's because you've learned all those skills, right? That to bring you to that next space. And I think a lot of people are afraid to hire people in. They don't want to look like they don't know everything. But what you're saying is so true. It's like, you got to learn it all and then build off of it.
And you're never going to know everything.
You're never going to know anything.
It's just the reality, and just the chaos of learning everything forces you to really understand and learn everything to a T. But having those, it's kind of always comes back to that coaching and the football parallel. The best players are also the players that are willing to get coached.
Yeah.
I've seen amazing players that don't take coaching well and they don't last long.
No, they're not willing to listen or change or adapt, right?
And that's like 24/7. You have to change. You got to adapt. Your idea might be great. Tomorrow morning, it sucks.
Yeah. It's like, okay, this is not going to work.
And if you don't have that type of personality, like,
you're going to be left in work. The, you're going to be left.
Left behind.
What's like one of the best pieces of advice you've gotten that you could take from the sports world into your business world? Like, with all these coaches that you've been around, what's one that just resonates to you?
I think it's just that classic line that I heard even from a young age, the next play. You can't carry the baggage of either a mistake or a success into the next decision. You have to be laser focused. You got to make decisions on the spot. And it's the next play, the next play, the next play. You're not going back in time. You got to learn from the mistake and then you got to carry forward.
Yeah. And you can't really, I think one of the best things that I've gotten is just not being, you don't have to really be in that feeling. You just move on. You don't really get pushed into it.
Yeah.
Because you can't get emotional about it. You just move on very quickly.
And the ups and downs in business are
crazy.
Constant.
Yeah.
And they're never going away.
No.
And the highs and lows, everything in between, you got to just go.
Yeah. That's so true.
Yeah,
and adapt as much as you can. Do you feel like because you're in so many places, like, you know, of course, Vancouver's home to you, you're kind of moving into different directions or different places to go visit different partners and stuff. Do you feel like there's a huge opportunity for Canada at all to get behind this? Or are you seeing it more obviously in the larger places, more people, more markets, right?
Yeah, I mean, Canada, just from a population standpoint, we're still small.
Small.
Geography is a big impact as well, right? It's a big country, so it's hard to have these large events.
Get people together.
Yeah, get people together, right?
But if Taylor Swift could do it, you could.
You can do it, yeah.
But you're seeing it.
I think, once again, my personality, I'm always going to chase the bigger market.
Yeah,
you know,
great.
I spend a lot of my time in New York and Toronto. Mm-hmm. That's where I see myself. That's where I see these big events. And that's why they are the epicenters of all these large events, right?
Do you feel like you're now with what you guys have done so much on the company side? Tell me a little bit about the acquisition side. How did you find these partners to come in? Like, where did that just come from? Great hunting or word of mouth or great relationships over time? Where did it come from for you on your side of it?
We have a whole team, right? M&A team. So mergers and acquisitions team.
Yeah.
They're constantly looking for deals. They're in conversations with dozens of companies all the time.
Right.
Around the clock. But the reality is it comes through the entire industry. You get to know the main players and it kind of just happens organically from there. They say, hey, have you heard of this new company? It's up and coming. Maybe you should reach out to them or, you know, I really like, we worked with these guys in the past. They're a great team. Go look at them, right? Because ultimately for us, my biggest thing for any deal is the people. So we buy companies, but the reality is we buy the team.
Yeah, the people with it.
That's the most important for us.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that where people are not seeing that talent and they're not looking at it. And that moment of you spending that time with that partner is so important to see those people.
You're with them 24/7.
Because I've seen it, it's like not great.
You're with them 24/7. And
it's so great. Well, I mean, your journey is, you should be so proud of it. I mean, and also it's just starting, it feels like, which is so exciting. Give that person that's thinking of, that's maybe a pro athlete and or that's in the business that wants to go into business generally, one piece of advice that you can share of your wisdom the last little bit?
Yeah, I think circling back to just that positivity and the manifestation of what you want to do, and then going and just doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people just don't take that leap of faith, trusting yourself, you know, whether it's putting in your own capital or just literally just doing it. It could be as small as opening up that first company yourself, you know, incorporating your first company,
mm-hmm.
step number one, and then you just go. I think that's people, they're generally speaking hesitant to try something new, or, oh, I wish I did this or did that. Just do it.
Yeah, there's literally so much fear.
But
for people, I'm like,
there's so much fear and doubt. But the reality is, if you don't do it, you're never going to do it. You have mm-hmm. to just go. And it yeah. sounds so simple.
But it's so true.
But that's what it is. That's all it is.
It's so true. It's like, just get that one foot in front of the other. I think a lot of people take too much time to think about it.
And you're going to fail. And you're going to fail hundreds of times or
yeah.
thousands of times. It's the classic Michael Jordan analogy.
Mm-hmm.
I missed 20,000 shots, but everybody remembers his, you know, X amount of championship rings.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And that's what it is. You're going to fail a lot more than you're going to succeed, but you got to just go.
Yeah. And listen to your, what I'm taking from this is, you know, I'm a huge compass reader on my intuition. I don't think I would have done what I've done if I wasn't like understanding where I'm at with it. Do you do anything to exercise that intuition now? Are you meditating? Are you working out regularly just to get you back into that frame?
The whole kind of concept of, you know, manifestation or, you know, positive thinking, I do it constantly, every single day. You know, I'll go for a walk or a hike
mm-hmm.
or even 10 minutes to myself during the day. And I'm already thinking of, what door am I walking in next? Who am I meeting next? And it's opened up doors that, you know, it's extraordinary, you know, working with billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Raising hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, these are things that I already envision myself walking in those doors. I've already sat in those rooms. So when I go there, it's not a big deal.
No, you're already there.
I'm already there.
Oh my God. I'm so excited for people to hear this because I think people make too much out of it.
Oh, and they do.
I'm like, stop it. No, you just got to do it. Which is the best advice you could give anybody, which is so important. So tell me, last thing is, what's kind of the future look like for the company, for yourself? And what, obviously you're getting married.
Yeah.
You're getting married. Sorry guys, he's off the market now. No more smudge. tell me, obviously you're getting married. That's a start a family possibly.
Yeah.
But what about just on the business side of things?
Business side is to explore what new door I could walk into.
Nice.
So I want to go to New York and play in the big pond,
mm-hmm.
you know, the tier one of the entire market, the financial hub of the world. Like, I want to go and experience that at the highest level and say that I've done it.
Amazing.
And I've already been there and I'm working on it, but that's kind of the main push is just, how far can this go and who else can I meet? And, you know, where does it go from here? I think that's excitement.
That's a lot of excitement.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so much growth there. And I'm going to be cheering you on from here, or I'll come see you.
Yes.
Sounds good. Thank you, Conrad, for being on Get On Top. We'll talk very soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Get On Top. Don't miss out on more incredible stories by rating, reviewing, and following our podcast on your platform of choice. Remember to tag us on social media at Get On Top Podcast. Until next time, keep climbing, keep striving, and always remember, the view is worth it from the top.
This podcast is produced and edited by Podfather Creative.